Today's program was brought to you by VisitNapaValley.com, the official page for travel to the Napa Valley, America's legendary wine, food, arts, and wellness capital. For more information, visit www.visitnapavalley.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning. You're listening to In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli. Very exciting show today. We have Ivan Miloš of Miloš Winery in the, now let me get this right, Pelješac Peninsula.
That's it.
Pelješac.
Bravo.
I've been there, and I find it very hard to say, but it's one of the most beautiful places in the entire world, probably the most beautiful wine region I've ever been to. And we have Ivan's distributor here in New York, Stetson Robbins, also joining us on the show. Stetson's great to have you here.
Thanks, Joe. Very exciting to be here for me.
How did you guys find this one? So I've been to Pelješac and tasted through lots of the wines in the area, and I have to say, by far, these were my favorite wines. I've been to visit the winery. I think I met with your father.
Yeah,
I don't know if you were there.
Actually, my father, we have a lot of people visiting us, yes. And you are the one he remembers because you found the same emotion about aging. About aging wine. He still remembers you talking about his plavas from the 1994, which is he's extraordinary proud about it. So it was my big pleasure to meet you in person. And when I told him that I will be a guest at your radio show, he was really happy. He says, say hi to him. I remember his compliments about our...
Get out of here. Yeah. That's amazing. And actually, before we... that just made my whole day. But before we get too far into the show, I do want to say, for any of those of you who are tuning in live tonight at Amphora from about 5 to 8 o'clock or so... Ivan will be there live in person and will be pouring all of his wines that are available here in New York. And you'll be able to taste the wines, just hang out. It's really easy going. If you guys have been to the producer nights before, just a way to hang out with a producer in a very casual setting. It's not a formal presentation or anything. Really fun. I will be there. Ivan will be there. Stetson will be there. I hope you will be there as well.
The 2014 rosé, which
so it's
is not available.
So some new teaser, like teasers. Yeah.
Great. So Stetson, tell us about how you guys came in contact with Miloš, and how long you've had the wines and so on.
Well, so Frank and Zsuzsa, who founded Blue Danube, they on a very early trip, almost 10 years ago or so. Found Miloš because historically, they've been one of the most important wine-producing families for a very long time. And Frank was really taken with the wines. It took a few years before we got to start working together, but I think we've been working together now for...
5 years.
Five or six years, yeah.
It's actually in the beginning, I still remember when we started working, I found a visit card from the Frank from the 2004, 2005, when he first time visited Ferrano, and he said he wanted to import the wines to the States, and Ferrano said, we need to wait a little bit, we don't have enough, you know? And then when we starting to work more with the winery, mm-hmm. with the wines, actually we started to do more cooperation, and then now we are working with Stetson, with other people from Blue Danube. It's great. Great thing for us.
Well, I have to say, I absolutely love the work that Blue Danube does. Stetson's one of our trusted distributors, and I think you're one of the smartest people doing what you're doing out there. Always brings a ton of knowledge and passion to it. So I think you've landed in good hands.
I believe so.
we're lucky to work with Miloš. I mean, they are a very special producer. There's nobody making wine in quite the same style. And they're if I had to, the Miloš Plavac, which you've worked with, if I had to explain Croatia in one wine, that might be. It's certainly a good example.
I agree. And when you look at these vineyard sites, as I said before at the top of the show, they're some of the most beautiful the most beautiful place in the world for making wine. Extraordinarily steep vineyards, high elevation, looking out to the sea.
Yeah.
And you look at it, you're like, how could you not make great wine from this area? But I find that for my palate, some of the wines that are made from Plavac Mali in Pelješac are just really big, enormous. They're very high in alcohol and tannin, and some have residual sugar. And I just love the way that you guys make your wine.
Actually, we do like the natural wines, but our goal is not to make natural wine. It's just our way to make great wine. So it's just the way of working. So we found out that it's the only way to make great wines from the Plavac, doing like natural style. So we do completely organic production, and it's really important to have to maintain the vineyards in the right way, to have the freshness of the grape, to have the life in the grape, and then by natural wine making, to preserve it, that life. So that's one of the reasons why our wines can age for so long time. Also, we make big efforts in the vineyard. So we do a little bit different than others. Actually, we work much more in the vineyard than most people expect to work. The big part of our vineyards are ungrafted, which is also quite a unique thing because we have the sandy soil. So roots from its own wine can much better acclimatize to the area. And even in the hot summers, it always finds a little bit of humidity from the soil, and you can feel that freshness in the grape. So when you eat the grape, it's really wonderful. It's not tired when we are making the wine.
So has your father also always produced organic wine, or has this been a change that made something you believe in and you've
No. So we were always doing the same thing. Yes. In the past, we didn't call it organic. We didn't bothering by certification, things like that. Okay, now we are part of the European Union. We have a European certification. But even on our labels, you can't find the big sign of organic. You know, we are not advertising ourselves like organic natural winemakers. We are trying to produce great wines with strong expression of terroir, strong expression of grape variety Plavac Mali. And like I said, organic and natural is just the way to go there. So we are always doing the same. Always concentrating on getting the best grape. So, I don't know, fertilization, irrigation is not our thing in the vineyard.
When did your grandfather, where the vineyards are located, how was that location?
Yes, it's actually a fun story because actually my family lives in the same village almost 500 years. So we're always doing agriculture, mostly winemaking and olive oil growing. And then in the past, unfortunately, we had communism. We have been part of Yugoslavia. So in those times, you know, like big corporative wineries, they didn't care about quality, they care just about quantities. So unfortunately, most of the people planted their vineyards in the flat area because the kilo, the price for the grape was the same if you have the vineyards on the best area where you can get much less than 1 kilo per wine. And the price is the same for the kilo if you have, I don't know, 5 kilos of the grape per wine. And my family was one of the few who didn't have any vineyards in the flat area, which was ridiculous. Do you know how hard it is to make, you saw that vineyards, to plant it, to make all these dry stone walls, all the terraces, and everything like that. So my grandfather, he was always hardworking guy, always working 12 hours a day, mostly in the vineyards in those times, because it wasn't allowed to have your own label. And in the late 80s, when the communism fell down, Frano, my father, was one of the first who started doing privately owned winery. And the good thing for me today is that we have one of the best vineyards, you know, because it's on the best position.
That blows my mind that even at a time where there was no financial incentive to do so, he still worked they're insanely steep vineyards. I'm kind of klutzy, and just walking through these was, you know, challenging. I couldn't even imagine.
Yeah, especially that our village is Ponikve, that Ponikve region, it was really unknown in the past. And Frano was always against the big corporate wineries. He always fighting with them, so showing that we can produce great wines from this area. And I didn't care. They just put it in the massive production. So, and when he established Sagnum, like our premium brand, and Plavac in the 1989, 1992, things like that, that became like big thing. It was like the first big wines from Croatia.
And I think that most Americans, at least, are not very familiar with the Plavac Mali grape, which is a very important grape in the central Croatian area. Can you tell us what's characteristic of this grape? What's the potential for it?
So actually, the Plavac Mali, people maybe from the States knows that Zinfandel, which is quite popular here, is originally from Croatia. They did DNA analysis like 10 years ago and concluded it. and the Plavac Mali's son, Zinfandel, and other parent is Dobričić, also indigenous grape variety from Sholt Island. So I like to say that the Plavac Mali has the best from both parents. So it has really small berries. So Plavac Mali means something like little the blue one. So it gets small berries, really thin skin, a lot of polyphenol compounds, even in the skin, even in the juice. It's really rich. So it's kind of the grape which is not so aromatic in the first. It's kind of the grape which has a really big potential for further aging. So that's what we do. We red wines, we age at least 4 or 5 years. It has good freshness. Mm-hmm. It's not acidic, but it's not low acidic. So it's great ratio between all the compounds in the grape. It's really rich. It's really rich, and it needs a lot of time to aging to get more rounded.
Yeah, and it's something that I keep hearing from winemakers who I respect and wines I really love, that all you really need is the grapes and time, and then everything else will sort itself out. And I love that for your kind of, at least in the U.S. market, your entry-level wine, the one that we have by the glass at Amphora, the current release is 2009, so it's five years old wine, yeah. And at a very kind of approachable price. So, Stetson, is that when you bring around these wines to people, do you obviously they're not making a ton of wine, but do you kind of know who you're going to bring this to, and it's someone who you think is very already amenable to more off the beaten path kind of wines, or are you trying very hard to introduce these to buyers who might change their mind?
I would definitely both. I mean, these for you put these wines in front of the right person, and they immediately understand them and love them and want to work with them. And then for you, typically, I think it's with they do really well anywhere people are really working hands on with the wines. Places like Amphora, where you're talking to the customers about the wines, there's an opportunity for exchange. Retail shops where people are curious to try something new and they're open to the suggestion of who they're yeah. buying from. In general, specifically with Milos, people, I mean, you really feel the location in the wines, and it makes them almost, I think the notion of terroir is easier to see in Milos than in a lot of other wines, because it's so apparent. I mean, you taste the Mediterranean environment, you taste the sea, and you taste Plavac.
So actually, when I was coming in New York, my flight was from the Zagreb, which is capital city of Croatia, which is some 300 miles from my Pelješac Peninsula. So it's our lifestyle over there is quite interesting because we work in the vineyards. It's not too populated area. We work what we do. And then when we need to travel, we need to drive a lot. So I always listen for the radios, for nice music and nice radio shows. And then there was a quotation of Mr. Nelson Mandela. He told that if you speak to it was mostly about languages, and he says if you speak to someone it goes to his head, but if you speak to someone in his language, it goes to his heart. So you can easily apply that to the wine. So most of the wine people try to understand with the brain, with the head, and we are trying to produce wine which you can understand with your heart. So we are trying to reach the heart of the people, reach the soul. When we are trying to get a new customers, new people, new audience for our wines, and Stetson and whole Blue Danube team do a great job about finding those people who have a heart for the wines like this. Because if you put this wine in the front of the people who do like chemical analysis in their head and you know things like that, and they won't appreciate it. So we are trying to do, you know what. When you looking to the media, to the newspapers, you found a lot of articles which is just for the big masses. So if I do, for example, the newspaper, I would probably have a few thousand people reading my news because I wouldn't have any actors, any stars, things like that. I would have just real stuff. So it's the same like we are doing with the wine. We don't want the audience which everybody drinks has because we are mediocrity. We want to have the small group of not so small, but a small group of people who appreciate what we do, who knows what we are looking for in the wines, and they know what they are looking into the wines, like wine drinkers.
Well, I have to say that my heart and my soul right now are longing for rosé weather. And staring at this rosé is getting me very thirsty. And so I'm also just excited. I don't know if I've tried the rosé before, so it's exciting to have something that we're going to be previewing tonight. We'll pour this tonight at Amphora as well. I'm going to grab a little taste of this. Is the rosé a style that's historic to the area? I mean, you're so close to the sea, and Plavac wines are earthy, complex, kind of, you know, more dense, concentrated red wines. That it, to me, that makes a lot of sense to look for a rosé style.
Yeah. But please tell the story of Frano's difficulty
about
with the rosé.
Yes, actually, the rosé was kind of the thing with people in our area were producing in the past, but not so much. They were always concentrated on the red wines. Yeah, thank you. And we decided to produce rosé, but our idea is was to produce like more like serious kind of the rosé. So we used the best grape from Plavac Mali from our 30 years old vineyards, and then we made rosé, but not in the modern way. It's also like a classic way with native yeast fermentation. So most of the and then in Croatia, when you want to sell the wine, you need to do chemical analysis, and then there is a board of five people tasting it, and says they give you they tell you, can you sell it or not? They need to taste it, even if your chemical analysis is great. So most of the times we had a huge problem with them because they are used, you know, like fruit forward, fresh rosé, and then we have total opposite thing. And I said, it's not the rosé we want. And they forbidden us, one vintage, they forbidden us even to sell. So most of it actually, my friend were really happy with that because most of those wine they drink.
You just had to give it away.
Yeah.
That's insane to me. That notion that you guys have, you know, labored so hard all year long to make this wine by hand, not using chemicals, not using yeast or anything like that.
Yeah.
And then just because some bureaucrat says, I don't like the way it tastes, like, you can't even sell it.
Now we can. Now we can, but we had some problems. We always have difficulties with them. So, but we found out that this is kind of the rosé which people don't expect to taste, you know.
And I've heard these stories in Italy and France, certainly, where people have been denied the appellation. One story that I really like is from Piedmont. There's a Barolo producer called Cascina Ebreo, and they decided to make an organic Barolo and to not filter it. And rather than the consortio said, you know, you're not allowed to call this Barolo because it's unfiltered and it's turbid or torbido. So after that, they said, well, we don't want to make Barolo anymore. We're just going to make a wine called Torbido. But I've never heard of someone actually saying, you're actually, based on the way it tastes, you're not even allowed to sell it, regardless of, you know, under any appellation. That blows my mind.
Well, yeah. It's interestingly, I think a lot of us in the wine industry spend a lot of time understanding wine laws, but working in countries like Croatia, Hungary, Slovenia, the Republic of Georgia, the people whose wines you want to drink are making wines above the law, not outside of it, but they're much stricter and have much more vision than the people who are responsible for making the laws, who maybe don't even drink wine. And so I would rather focus on producers who are doing very individual things than understanding, you know, who cares if they don't get the stamp of approval. Yeah. We can find the right people for the wine without it.
Luckily, now when we joined European Union actually have the better laws about, they try to protect the place of origin.
Mm-hmm.
And what we are doing right now is to make a designation of origin for our area, because they didn't do it in the past because of communism. So we are working on that, and now we want, actually, what's really important for the wine, it's to show the place and the variety, and then the people make it. If you protect it, that's really important. It's not like the taste of from somebody from some board or things like that. So
I have to say that tasting this Miloš Plavac rosé brings me back to the Dalmatian coast, and I wish that I was there right now. On that note, we're going to take just a quick break. We're going to have more with Ivan Miloš, and we're going to taste two of his red wines and also Stetson from Blue Danube after a short break.
Today's program was brought to you by VisitNapaValley.com. Welcome to the Napa Valley, North America's legendary wine and food capital, where the art of living well is defined and each season holds a story waiting to be discovered. Life feels slower here, lived at a place where tables are set with care, fine wine and food are created from the bounty of our own vineyards and gardens, and relationships with friends and family gathered around the table are somehow sweeter. When planning a trip to the Napa Valley, we invite you to visit the destination's official visitor website, visitnapavalley.com, or stop by Napa County's official visitor information center, located in downtown Napa, where our friendly and knowledgeable community ambassadors can assist you in creating your own legendary Napa Valley experiences. The Visitor Information Center is located at 600 Main Street in Napa and is open from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., 7 days a week, 360 days a year. Your invitation to experience the Napa Valley beckons. Take a deep breath, lose yourself in our quiet green and golden hills, renew your body and spirit, taste our legendary wines and cuisine, and experience the people who make this valley like no other in the world. For more information, go to visitnapavalley.com.
All right, and we're back with Stetson Robbins from Blue Danube and Ivan Milos, my favorite Plavatsmali producer.
Thank you.
One we have at Amphora. And just a reminder, tonight, Stetson, Ivan, and I will all be at Amphora. You also see Dave Foss and I think Brett Elms as well there, and our great team from Amphora. And we're just really excited. We're going to have a little producer night. The wines are going to be all poured by the glass at a discounted price from about 5 to 8 o'clock. And it's going to be a lot of fun.
I would like to see much more people there and having great fun, because we were pouring some stuff which is available, some stuff which is new thing. So it will be really fun to see that. Actually, what we do, we do just one grape, Plavatsmali, on one spot, but on much different ways. We have different wines from the rosé, regular Plavats, some archi wines, even some sweet things which we do sometimes. It's really fun. I invite people.
All right. Let's taste that Plavats. This one I know well, but I can't get enough of it. And talk to me as we pour this, and I'll be tasting it in a minute, about you're a young guy living in this tiny little town in Croatia. Did you ever have any desire to, you know, move to Zagreb or move somewhere, was it always the thought for you to stay with the winery?
No, actually, when I was a kid, I was thinking, I was thinking about my future. Where would I live, or what will I do in the future? Then I was studying at Zagreb. I was studying actually enology and viticulture for 5 years to got my master's degree over there. So I was living in Zagreb for 5 years, traveling a little bit through Europe. But then when I get after college, I really decided that I really want to live in the Pelješac Peninsula, doing wine growing, doing winemaking, because I really enjoy it. And my family is over there. We are really connected, mm-hmm, with each other. So, for example, I always like to say that with my brother, for example, who is just 2 years younger than me, we work together. So I like to say that I don't know much people who hang out so much with their siblings, because we live in the same family house, which is 500 years old, and then we work together, and then we hang out in the free times together, going to the bars, tasting some other wines, traveling a little bit. So it's great enjoying the life, you know, because it's not important where do you live, it's important about the people you know. So even in New York, it's not like the big city, it's like the good people, like we are now having a nice time talking about good stuffs. So that's really important. And now, because of the wines, these wines are bringing me to really nice places, like this radio show. So I'm really happy with what I'm doing, I'm really enjoying it. And actually, people think that I enjoy the most the traveling, but I enjoy most being in the vineyards. And I'm trying to be more and more over there, especially doing some regular stuff, you know, because today, unfortunately, a lot of winemakers, a lot of owner of the wineries, they don't do anything in the vineyards. You know, they just have the brand, they just sign it, they're just trying to sell it. And actually, I like to say it's like the surgeon who doesn't do surgeries. You need to be there. You need to see the blood of the vine. You need to work there, dig the soil, if you really want to understand and make something above the bar.
Yeah. And what do you think was the most important thing, or some of the biggest lessons that you learned during your time at university?
Yes, actually, okay, I learned a lot of things about chemical stuff in the wine, what's happening, so now I can better understand what's actually happening. But when I learned more scientific way, I decided to stick more to the natural winemaking, because it's really much harder way. Lots of people use the natural way like excuse to make bad wines, and it's not what we're doing. it's really hard to do natural ray. It's really a risky process. Sometimes you need to be there. So I believe it's impossible to produce natural one in huge quantities. Mm-hmm. It's really a risky process. You need to have a big knowledge, scientific knowledge, but you have to have a huge intuition, big experience, because you just need to feel it. So that's why we have Ferrano still over there helping us. Because, for example, for fermentation, it's really hard to do it in the right way, to keep the freshness of the wine, to go through fermentation all the way to the end, to have the dry. Plavats on the dry side, because we really don't want to make wines with residual sugar, with overcooked fruit. That's what we avoid.
Yeah, and some people do make wines with plavats that have residual sugar and have much higher alcohol than this. What do you think is the... I mean, I just love this. I love these wines. Just tasting the Plavats 2009 right now, it is really complex, really earthy, elegant. You can tell that it's a wine that's made at a high altitude because there's some ripeness to it, but there's also lots of earthiness and some juicy acidity. This is a red wine that I wouldn't mind being at the at the beach or the seaside. Yeah. But also I think we definitely had like a lot of good roasted game meat once you get further in. How do you make a wine like this other than it being a more naturally produced wine? I mean, obviously, it's if you were to take the same grapes in a naturally produced wine and not, you're not going to, if you're going to add chemicals to this, it wouldn't be a 15.5% alcohol residual sugar wine. Is it because you have a higher altitude? Are you picking earlier than some of the other people in the area?
It's quite complex to explain everything in one sentence, but it's the biggest thing is our vineyards. Like I explained before, it's a dolomite limestone. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of magnesium carbonate over there, which keeps really humidity, which keep freshness of our air, of our vineyard. Then it's ungrafted vineyard. Then our approach to the wine growing, to always have the great ratio between the leaves, the grape, the clusters and everything. And then also it's really important the time of the harvest. The weather is changing. We are getting more and more warmer summer. So some people actually, I don't know what they're doing, but they don't see that. So they do the harvest in the same time like they were doing 30 years ago. And the vine, the grape, doesn't look at calendar. They just count the number of hour of suns they got. So if the grape is ripe in the right moment, you need to do the harvest. Sometimes 2 days later is too much.
Yeah.
So it's really you need to be there every day, just watching. And first time actually it was a fun story, because it was 2007 when it was really hot here. Ferrano says it was end of August, and usually people harvest plavats end of September. Ferrano told us, okay, let's go harvest. And even me was against it. I said, it's too early. What are you doing? It's not ripe. And then few years after, I said to him, yeah, you were right.
Yes. He tasted everyone else's 2007s, and they're just big and clumsy, and you still had energy and vibrance.
Still energy, still on dry side, mm-hmm. a lot of aromas of aging. It's totally different than most people expect to have from plummet.
Amazing. And, just hearing you say that, it reminds me that we have a tendency to want to distill and understand wine in a very narrow scope. And in my head, I'm like, oh, it's the ungrafted vines, and that's why there's a lower alcohol level, because I've heard from multiple producers who work with ungrafted vines that you're able to get a higher level of phenolic ripeness or flavor ripeness at a lower alcohol level. But it really is such a complex mix of different things, and it's and I'm sure that Stetson is someone who sells wines, but also someone who is super passionate about understanding the people behind the wines and how they're made. You kind of have to choose which are the most important things. You only have so much time to talk about them with people.
Mm-hmm. I think with Milos, and you feel it in the wines, and especially you having been there, you've seen this yourself, there's incredible unity between the location that they're farming, the location where they make the wine. The cellar is also quite important. And the style of vinification, you talked about Barolo earlier. I oftentimes recommend these wines to people who like Barolo, no relation to Nebbiolo, or even in terms of the conditions, no similarities, but in the glass, this is a more oxidative vinification. Mm-hmm. There's not all this emphasis on preservation of fruit. And because Plavats has so much fruit, you you get underneath a little bit of that. There's incredible complexity, but you still have lushness and balance. But the unity that you feel in their wines is what I find most attractive, and it's something that it leaves you wanting to share them with everybody.
Yeah, and I forgot to say that all of these wines we age in the big oak barrels of Slavonian oak, which is also something in common with some Barolo, old-fashioned Barolo producers. So it's like 2,000 liters, which we use for a long time. Even we have one barrel in a cellar, which is from the 1942. And wow, we have year on it, and people get surprised to see such a old barrel in great condition. So we do the steam washing it to get always the great hygiene. And then this Plavac was more than 2 years in a Slavonian oak. So
I remember that distinctively about your cellar. You know, it's so many wine cellars look the same. You know, it's really vineyards that are exciting, but your cellar was different. I remember only large old oak barrels.
Yeah,
maybe I didn't see it, but I don't remember seeing any stainless steel around anywhere.
No.
Nothing. And it really had this very kind of old world feel. And something that I think a lot of people get confused is the use of Slavonian oak, which as Ivan correctly said, is popular with a lot of Barolo producers. Great, like a lot of my favorite Barolo producers use Slavonian oak. It's actually a Croatian forest, and not to be confused with Slovenian oak, which there is some oak that's made in Slovenia, yeah, not as popular or as high quality as the Slavonian oak.
It's actually, Slavonian oak is a really great one. And unfortunately, a lot of people are just following the trends. And then even in Croatia, they introduced, I don't know, the French, the American oak, which is great, but doesn't make sense to make Croatian wines in the French oak, right, when we have such a good, great quality oak in Slavonia. So this is actually, even in those way, we produce really unique wines from the place, from our country, to even the oak is, just the corks are not from Croatia.
So when did you make any changes integrating back into the winery? Was there anything where you're like, Dad, come on, get with the times, let's do things this way?
We were talking about this last night.
No, I'm even more conservative than my father is. So, which is unexpectable.
Yes.
Because I stick to the natural winemaking, to this way, because, I don't know, I hate to feel sulfites in the wine. If you want to do modern wine, if you want to preserve food, you need to put conservative in, and that's sulfites. And that's unnatural for me. So, for example, this wine has minimum, almost, they're almost sulfite-free. Not sulfites, but almost. So, that's what I want to do, to make wine which I really enjoy to drink. And this is kind of the wine I really enjoy to drink, which I feel great after it. I don't get tired from them.
Yes, I mean I agree with that, and we have the Stagnum in our glass right now.
Yeah, it's 2006 vintage.
2006 vintage. Current release.
It's
amazing.
Yeah,
amazing. So one thing I'll have to call you out. One thing that I did notice that has changed is the labels. Is that true?
Yeah, you changed the labels.
So nothing in the vineyard, nothing in the glass. The least important thing in the world. But to me, I always want to. I want to ask about this because I've noticed it with a lot of European wines where there's a label change to make something that I'd love to hear your feelings on it. But the label to me looks very modern, very clean, modern, up to date, and maybe not, when I think of a wine that might have a label like that, maybe it's a more technical wine, and yours is something that's made so much by hand, so much,
yeah,
so natural. What was the thought behind that?
We made this change a few years ago, so it was 2010, 2012, so we didn't want to pretend it's old label when it's new label. The style of winemaking stayed the same, but we changed the label. It's quite pretty simple label. They don't have a huge Miller sign of it. You need to grab the bottle if you want to read, actually. So that's our wine. You need to get close to them to understand. It's not something which will be on shelves from 50 meters. You will see the Miller Stagnum sign. And then on these labels, we have these lines, pretty simple, which represents our terraces of the vineyards. So, and we kept a little bit of old style of wine, of design of the labels. So people like it because it's recognizable, it's pretty simple, and it's quite clean. What we also want to do, our wine is old-fashioned way, but it's pretty clean. There is no any bad things out, you know, it's any faults.
I would actually take kind of an alternative position on the labels in that although the method of production is traditional and to some extent old, this was, it doesn't mean it's not intelligent and or informed. And they spend a lot of time understanding the science behind what's happening in the wines. And although these are not wines, they're not trying to make technical wines, they're not wines of analysis, the finished product, they're biologically finished, they're very stable, there's no faults or flaws, and what you end up tasting is the essence of the location. They grow one grape and produce a number of different iterations. The Stagnum that we're drinking right now is 15% alcohol, but it still has the freshness. I mean, it's not as clunky. There's a levity to the wines that you'll even sense in... This is the most traditional wine that is produced in the region. It's basically Prošek from Plavac-Mali.
I mean, that's amazing to me. I was about to comment how tasting the Stagnum, it's refreshing to have a premium Plavac-Mali that is 14% alcohol. You don't taste... I never taste a 15% alcohol wine that doesn't taste like a 15% alcohol. You know, they're so... Once you get to that level of alcohol, they're so often overbearing.
But it's a tight line to walk to do it. I mean, it's graceful. It's
more complexity. It's old wine selection of the best. It's really limited production. And then we aged for a long time. So it's like current release because we need much more time of aging than even for the regular.
We were drinking the 03 yesterday.
Yeah, and actually, 03, maybe you remember, it was one of the hottest year in Europe. Extremely hot. And we had a harvest, which even our alcohol was even lower than in this one, but we needed much more time of aging. So Ferrano decided to age this wine for 10 years in the winery. So actually it was the first Croatian wine which was released after 10 years of aging. And now we first starting to selling 2004, 2005, and then we came back 2003, and people can't believe it. From such a hot summer, we have a wine which is still alive. You can age it for decades.
The 94...
Yeah, it's regular Plavac from the 94. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
Regular Plavac, and I brought that back in my suitcase, and it's just extraordinarily delicious wine that shows that if you make wine by hand and do nothing else, and do it in from a really good terroir, it can age for a long time. Okay, we have to taste this last wine really quickly because we're running out of time. But I haven't had this before, and I have it in my mouth, and I'm loving it. The sweetness that's on the approach, and then dry and tannin and acid and complex, and I don't know what's going on.
I always say that, for example, like rosé, we pour the rosé, people don't expect to have something like this, and then we ask, do you want to taste the sweet wine from the Plavac? People, I don't prefer sweet wine. A lot of people don't prefer sweet wines, and then taste these, and then, they got out of their mind, because it's a totally different way of sweet wines. It's not syrupy. It's really serious with great structure. So for this wine,
you could have it with savory food.
Yeah, with foie gras or things like that. So this is kind of wine which we produce from the grape, which we drive on the ropes under the roof, the old traditional way. And even for this wine, we do native yeast fermentation, which is really risky. It sometimes lasts for even next summer, we get fermentation in the barrel. So we have also several years of aging in the barrels, also used wines. And then it goes to bottle. We don't stabilize. Fermentation just stopped. We don't add anything, to filter, to stabilize it. And then we bottle it, and this wine can last forever.
Forever. I believe you with that. Thank you so much for
being
on the show.
Thank you for having me.
These are truly my favorite Croatian red wines. I'm so excited you're on the show. And I'm super excited to hang out with you more tonight at N4. I hope to see you guys there 5 to 8 o'clock. They'll be discounted by the glass wines. And obviously, Ivan is a wealth of knowledge. And his family is making truly the most soulful, expressive wines. I'm proud to pour them at Amphora, and I'm super happy that you're on the show.
Thank you very much for inviting me, and I really enjoy being in New York, and I really enjoy hanging out with the people, so I'm really looking forward to the evening, to the afternoon today.
Cool. And I have to say, if you guys are looking for a fun wine adventure for wines that are not typical, what you can find in any place, but they're unique, expressive wines from places that you don't hear of and grapes that are not common, the Blue Danube portfolio is extraordinary. So I love working with Stetson. It's great to have you on the show as well, Stetson.
Thank you so much.
All right. Likewise. And thanks again for listening. This has been In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.